So where is Dietmar then?
Oh, I let him in to the waiting room. Text Dietmar now.
Is Dietmar in internet purgatory?
He may be. There he is.
Welcome, Dietmar. We're good to go.
Hey.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
This calls to order the for December 6th, and it is.
Hey, Sam, is your mic on?
Yeah, flip it on the bottom. Yeah, and put it right. Yeah, because it's the mic that you're using here, so.
Light on. Yeah, that's fine. Is that better?
Testing. Much better, thank you.
Okay, so we're just going to start again. Take two. This calls to order the work session for Monday, December 6th at 4:09 p.m. Peggy, will you please do roll call?
Councillor Jacoby?
Here.
Goble?
Here.
Kaplan?
Here.
Parker?
Hello.
And Hall?
Here. All right, and today's discussion items, we have... Oh, sure, sorry. As a review, Councillor Botelho Salgado is excused from the December work session and council meeting, and Mayor Sawyer, we need to just ask for him to be, a motion for him to be excused from the work session. So we would...
So moved.
Great. That was...
Second.
Councillor Kaplan, seconded by Councillor Parker. All in favor of excusing Mayor Sawyer, please say aye.
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 All right. And then the city manager's report, we'll turn that over to Spencer, but please be aware that we have limited time with the items, and we have about an hour for the first three items in total, and then we will go into executive session. Spencer.
Okay. Our first part of the work session is with Public Works Director David Paul. He's going to provide a presentation to the City Council on the Wastewater Treatment Plant Master Plan update. The first phase of this plan was completed in 2018, and we were waiting until we dealt with some issues and better understanding our industrial waste, and we're ready to go forward with the next phase, but I'll turn it over to David Paul.
Hey, thank you, Spencer. Let's see. I've got a PowerPoint presentation, so I'll share my screen. Hopefully you can all see this.
Right, David, right now we just see the Zoom United screen. So we're not actually, what you linked to, it didn't show pull up your slides. There we go.
In that?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. Let's just jump right in. So Wastewater Treatment Master Plan update, December 6th, 2021. This will just paraphrase what you saw in your staff report. The Wastewater Treatment Master Plan was initiated in 2017. We're continuing that now in three phases. The first phase was to establish the baseline conditions. Second phase second phase to develop the alternatives and a cost analysis for each of the components. And then the third phase was to prepare the facilities plan and provide rate structure support. The phase one was completed in 2018, and that established the flows and loads to the treatment plant. They did a current operational conditions of the wastewater plant and pump stations, and they identified near-term improvements that needed to be completed. Some of those improvements have been completed since 2018. And the master planning process was paused upon completion of phase one. The reason was because of the erratic flow or loading to the plant, and to get an accurate baseline conditions, the city needed to establish what the source was of the biological load coming into the plant, and that's that was later discovered to be Rogue Brewery. And then you know the story of Rogue Brewery. Since then, we've established a pre-treatment program and an agreement with them to not discharge erratically to the wastewater treatment plant. So we're now entering phase two. We're going to start with a review and update of the 2018 sewer system plan, develop alternatives for the treatment plant unit processes, prepare a scoring matrix to aid in ranking the alternatives, and then develop costs and a schedule for the improvements. So Brown and Caldwell is going to prepare the liquids and biological systems assessments. Kennedy Jenks is going to prepare the biosolids processing and disposal systems alternatives. Both companies have provided draft proposals. They provided them last week, and they're being reviewed by staff. And our schedule is to complete phase two by this coming summer. Current condition of the wastewater plant, it was recently updated because we wanted to have a current standard status of the of all the components of the treatment system. The assessment shows that, and this was done just in 2021, shows the north side pump station, the influent pump station, and booster stations are in fair to poor condition. For instance, the screens are failing and they need daily manual cleaning, especially at the north side pump station, where if it backs up in the north side pump station, it will overflow one of the upstream pump stations. So these screens have to be maintained daily. It requires a lot of staff time to operate and maintain. There are critical wastewater treatment plant processes that are old and continuing to age quickly. The centrifuges, for instance, one of the transmissions is growling. And it's been growling for some time, and it's just a matter of time before it fails. We've got outdated automation at the solids processing area that requires manual operation of the solids processes. The influent pump station PLC, the programmable logic controller, recently failed completely, and that required manual operation of the influent pump station, which involved a lot of overtime for our operations staff. We had our consultants come in and wire around that PLC to temporarily get it functioning. But the city council will be seeing a request come through for a new PLC for that pump station. I included this graph in the staff report just as an illustration of growth in the biological loading over time to the wastewater plant. You can see in 2017, we were processing about 80,000 pounds of BOD a month. And now we're up around a little over 100,000. So growth continues to happen in Newport, as we know. And that results in increased loading to the wastewater treatment plant. So I'll just quickly conclude by saying that the wastewater plant is operating close to its maximum biological capacity during the summer months. That's the aeration basin that you recently approved the new aerators for. The wastewater plant is operating close to its maximum capacity, maximum hydraulic capacity during rainy winter months. So the wastewater plant has a maximum hydraulic capacity of 15 million gallons a day. And we actually hit that 15 MGD level last year. The wastewater treatment plant is operating beyond its design capacity for biosolids treatment. This means that the treatment plant was designed for one centrifuge operating at a time, with one centrifuge, another centrifuge as a backup. And currently both centrifuges are operating, and they operate over 12 hours a day. Critical components of the wastewater plant are aging quickly and in some cases failing. This is the example of the PLC at the infant pump station that I just gave. The planning, design, construction, and startup timeline for a wastewater treatment plant expansion is typically 5 years. So connecting the dots, over the next 5 years, this wastewater plant will continue to challenge our operations and maintenance staff. Expensive equipment and controls replacements will be required to maintain compliance with our waste discharge permit. So in a nutshell, that's what the staff report says. And I'm open for questions.
And David,
well, you're just full of good news, aren't you?
David, will you stop your screen sharing for everyone to be able to see each other?
Let's see. Stop share right there.
Any questions? Councilor Jacoby.
Yeah.
I'll start off. I have several questions. How old is the wastewater treatment plant?
20 years.
Years.
20 mm-hmm. years old.
Oh my. You said that its biggest load was in the summertime. Is that due to water needs from the fish processing plants and or the tourism industry? What's the biggest usage there?
The biggest contributor, well, it used to be the Rogue Brewery, and now we've sidelined that waste stream.
Mm-hmm.
So the contributors now are just growth within the city, population growth, and the summer tourism industry.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know, your restaurants and the like that, you know, have tourists come and eat mm-hmm. there and all of that. It's just normal growth, that biological load.
So it's kind of from a heavier tourist load, probably.
Correct.
Okay. Are we going to have any federal funds available to help replace this water treatment plant? Is that in the Build Back Better bill?
What I would say, go ahead.
I think there is potential for some funding as we develop the components of things that will need to be replaced. So we've got a better opportunity in this next window to try to secure some outside funding for this. But a lot of the work that's done is that needs to be done is really replacing existing components and taking a look in that five-year window of expanding the capacity of the plant. And those are going to be fairly big ticket items for the city as we move forward. And we've made certain improvements to parts of the plant, but this, I think the planning process will outline very specifically what sequence of improvements are necessary going forward over the next five-year period.
And I would take it and understand it that the city has not been able to accomplish a fund for replacement of the plant.
Yeah, we do not have a replacement fund in place. We do, our rates do support a certain level of reinvestment in the plan each year, and we have made investments, but this plan will really tell us where we need to be looking forward in the next five-year window.
Okay.
Councilor Parker.
So I guess Councilor Jacoby answered part of my question, which was, how do we stably fund the wastewater fund knowing we have future inputs that are very expensive coming up? And what is the timeline for the next phase of the master plan, and when will we have an when will we next be reviewing this?
I'll ask, have David answer the master plan question.
Yeah, that's 6 months. We want to have the phase two completed, and we should have a good idea on budget numbers at that time and phasing and schedule.
Are there other questions at this time? Councilor Kaplan.
I wanted to go back. When you said the rogue was sidelined, what does that mean?
So they have their own pretreatment wastewater plant there. So instead of sending all their biological load to our wastewater plant, they're treating it themselves.
Is that relatively new?
That is new, yes.
Okay, so how much of a load does that reduce?
Well, it depends on the day. Last couple weeks ago, Grant reported like a 2,000 pound slug load coming into the plant, a BOD. It really upsets the process. At one point, a couple years ago, prior to my time here, they sent a slug load to the treatment plant and actually killed the biological process. And that's what really prompted, getting with them and learning what their load was and how they could, treat it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Councilor Goebel.
Thank you for that report, David. I appreciate it. Looks like we have some work to do at the council trying to figure out how to help you in that effort. Hopefully we can find the money to do that. Yeah. We have a lot of other responsibilities too. So a couple of questions. The whole system seems to be in jeopardy right now, not only the plant itself, but the pump station at the north end, right?
Yes, sir. North side.
No, and the north side. So it's not only the plant itself, but the whole pumping system, the pipes that go up there and come back. And part of your master planning, and you say you'll do that in the next 6 months, you'll give the council a pretty good idea about what it is that we are talking about as far as repair and cost goes, right?
That's correct. We've tentatively scheduled another update in March for the council.
So the rogue thing, I know that we've been after them to put that in for some time now. What do they do with their sludge? Do they ship it somewhere? Do they take it somewhere? That they must have a filter system, and do they take it to the plant, or how's that shipped out of town?
They're responsible for disposal of their own biosolids product.
So we don't know how that happens, right? They have their own agreement with DEQ or something?
I don't know that myself. Grant's not on the phone. Perhaps he could. I could get back to you on that. I'm not sure. They don't give.
I understand. And we were talking about loads, and that the tourist industry is now contributing a significant load on the system. And the fish plants. I know that the fish plants, and I worked on fish plants before. A lot of that water that goes into fish plants is filtered and then discharged into the bay. It doesn't really go into the our storm system, sewer system. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So the fish plants all along don't really have a significant load on the plant. Is that right?
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah. So we always point the finger at the fish plants because they use so much water, but I don't think it necessarily goes back into the system once they use it.
No, sir. So, go ahead.
So how do you see in the master plan, and will you be putting together some scenario of the users that contribute the most? Somehow we ask them to contribute more, or how are we going to approach the master plan just financially to pay for all this?
Well, parsing up, how much load comes from different people is going to be part of the financial plan, and we're not there yet. What we're trying to do is get to the point where we know what the physical facilities are going to be and how much those are going to cost. When we look at who contributes what to the wastewater plant, I think if the council wants to break up the cost according to contributor percentage or what have you, that's something that's coming down the road.
Okay, so that's not going to be part of your master plan. It's how to pay for it. It's just that your master plan is going to show what needs to be done and what the costs are, right?
That's correct.
Well, I think the third phase, though, was dealing with rates, wasn't it, Dave?
Rate support, rate analysis, and rate support. That's correct.
So that'll be part of the third phase of the study.
Okay, so there will be some kind of a review of users versus costs or fees, right?
Yeah, no, we're just in the review of that portion of the proposals, and so with that, let me go back and look at that again. I think
as a councilor, I'd sure like to have some information if we're going to ask people to pay more or shift the burden here and there. It would be good to have that information so we could so we aren't stepping on too many toes, you know.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, when I talked to Grant,
let's go ahead, Dave.
I spoke with Grant about this particular issue some time ago, and when they did the flow and loading study, there was some real difficulty in figuring out, who contributed what to the waste stream at the wastewater plant. So it may be more qualitative than quantitative analysis. I'm not sure about that, but that's my feeling.
So your indication, you just said that we might not be able to figure out who the major contributors are or how that increase is happening?
Enough to parse out accurately a division of cost. Yeah, that's my feeling. I'm not sure if that's the case or not, but we'll approach that as we do this.
Yeah, okay. We might get into that later.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Councilor Parker.
I guess I still need clarification because I may feed it to me in bite-sized pieces here. So is the city saying that the characterization of Rogue's pretreatment plant is that it's online and complete, or it's still being built? I guess I needed to know that.
Yeah, basically.
It's online and complete.
Except they're still under the consent agreement to address some of the consistencies in there. And so there is more work they have to do with that plant, but generally the load has been substantially reduced from Rogue through this and through the consent period, which expires. Yeah, go ahead and speak. Yeah.
The consent agreement, which we went over with the council a while back, that lays out a time frame and a framework that Rogue has to implement, and they're still working through that time frame. I think it was a 2-year period in totality. So they're making steps, they're making progress, as we all know, but there's still more work to be done as far as putting in the necessary infrastructure and monitoring and coming up with the type of data that we need to analyze and reach a conclusion as to whether they're in compliance or not. So right now that's being worked on. Rogue's working diligently with our staff on that, and there's still more time yet to be done or work to be done to complete the process. And if you council wants, I can send the consent agreement out again with Spencer's report that just basically goes through it again and will probably answer a lot of the questions that are being asked right now tonight.
Thanks for the memory jogger. That'd be great.
Well, we're running on schedule, so if there are no more questions, I'll say thank you, David, for that report. And we'll move on to the next agenda item. The next agenda item is a report on the potential park development on the east side of Highway 101 in Agate Beach. And we have Mike Cavanaugh here from Parks and Nancy Steinberg, who is the chair of the Parks and Rec Committee. Welcome.
So anyway, again, Parks and Rec Director Mike Cavanaugh will give an overview of some of the preliminary discussions we've had about developing recreation facilities in this particular area. So I'll turn it over to you, Mike, and Nancy is here as well to provide any additional backup necessary on this item. But Mike, why don't you cover kind of where we're at with this discussion?
Sure. Good evening, Council. Also want to note, Derek Tokos is here. His department was part of some of the discussion with the property owner. So he can give some insight if needed there. So the 2019 Park Master Plan, there's some documents that were included in the packet for you all. Identify that the northern part of Agate Beach area is an underserved in regards to recreation facilities and parks. The closest facility that we currently have in the area would be the Agate Beach neighborhood dog park and park. The location that we're discussing obviously is on the east side. The piece of property that we are looking at is sandwiched between Surfview Heights apartment complex, which is the new complex that was built in 2019. This property is sandwiched between that and Longview Hills. And then there's a piece of it that wraps around to the north side of the current Surfview Village apartments. It's about 37 acres of land. The terrain is tough. Accessible from the northern side of the apartments or from behind the apartments that are there, the Surfview apartments off of 60th Street. The best location for entrance in there, and there are some easements, is on that back side of Surfview, on the east side of Surfview Village. The Park Master Plan itself identified this area as a need for a new park or a neighborhood park within that area. Because of the development that's happened there, you also have the Agate Heights apartment complex. Between those two apartment complexes, it's about 154, I believe, units in that one or those two complexes. Currently, the only thing that those two complexes offer are really small playgrounds. I don't have the sizes off the top of my head, but they are roughly about the same size in each complex. So to give you an idea, the fact that we have one complex playground is about that had 44 units is almost equal to the current playground that the 110 unit complex that went in back in 2019. As we know, it's low income housing. They filled up fast. I know there's a waiting list. The demand will be there on that east side for a long, long time. The level of service analysis that was done in the Park Master Plan determined the threshold was based on determined around if there is a recreational facility that is within or beyond a mile or mile and a half in regards to travel time for access, or if there's any physical barriers. Obviously, our physical barrier there up in that area is Highway 101. We don't have a safe traffic crossing to the east or to the west side to access the Agate Beach Neighborhood Park. And I believe that is being discussions that community planning is working on. But in the meantime, that area is still going to continue to grow. Unfortunately, both ends of our town are going to continue to grow. And that's where we have a level, a threshold level that's not being met and will probably continue to grow that way. This is obviously an equity issue. As those areas grow more, we need to continue that service. Community planning has had some discussion with the landowner in regards to the development, the idea behind it. We don't have the city any property in the area for a park on that east side. Derek has had some discussion with the property owner, very, very broad, very, very vague discussion. In regards to maybe a trade-off, the city going along and helping with some infrastructure needs with the development of that property. in turn, they are open to the idea of allowing or allowing some of the property that they own currently on that 37 acres for a neighborhood or pocket park per se. The park master plan, some of the documentation that you guys received, there is discussion or ideas from there for having like a picnic shelter, all-weather picnic shelter, playground system, restrooms, water fountains, and potentially there could be even some trail development back there. We are still working on and plan on doing a playground in the Agate Beach neighborhood park, which is on the west side again. But even then still, if we can provide a safe access to a park on the east side without having to cross 101, that would be ideal. Location wise, again, that access point and in the map would be from the east side, behind Surfview Village. We initially were looking at roughly, hopefully, maybe, you know, 4 to 5 acres of property. We don't think that's a reasonable ask anymore just because of the size and terrain after walking it. So probably the more ideal size of a preferred park would be 1.5 to 2.5 acres if we can get it. I think that would be adequate size for a playground. That would be an adequate size for a picnic shelter in the area. Our park, we've had support from our Parks and Rec Advisory Committee. There were some suggestions there too in regards to maybe a potential bocce ball court and some other fun additions there. But that would be, you know, the ideal location in regards to size. But in the end, it's going to be something that we would need to evaluate as a city, especially as the area grows more and more. And just wanted to bring this to the attention of council moving forward as we go along in years. So, and then I can open up I can pass it along to Nancy if she would like to say something.
Thanks, Mike. I think that I'll just make a couple of quick points. One is that I've submitted a memo to council, so that you should have that somewhere that outlines the fact that the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee is very supportive of this idea. Going back to a memo that I sent you a number of months ago that was more of an update on the Parks Master Plan implementation and sort of advocacy, our next round of advocacy for what we'd like to see happen specifically from that plan. And so even before we knew that there was this possibility for partnering with a private landowner, we were extremely supportive of developing some kind of recreational amenity in that part of Newport. The other thing I'll mention is that, as Mike said, we did have a discussion in the committee as to what specifically should go on the site. And of course, that's going to be really site dependent. And I haven't even seen the site personally, so I don't know. But one of the things that we all agreed on very strongly was that the folks who should have the biggest say as to what's put there are the people that live there. So obviously, there'll have to be some public outreach and community visioning about what goes there. But I just want to reiterate that the entire committee is unanimously and strongly supportive of this project, and we're really excited that there's actually a possibility to make it happen. So thanks, and I'll answer any questions. I think probably Mike and Derek are better equipped to answer most questions, but I'm here.
Are there any questions? Before we get into questions, I just want to say so many of the counselors in the last couple of years have talked about that equity piece that you mentioned as a glaring equity issue around having more development on the east side of 101, but not having adequate services. And a service to the community is a park. So I'm really excited about the possibility of making something happen there. Any questions for Mike or Nancy? I hope I speak for the council in what I just said, that there's excitement around this.
And Ryan is excited.
Yeah, thumbs up, smiles, this is good. Keep us posted.
Cynthia's got a comment.
Councilor Jacoby, sorry.
Thank you. I actually have a question for Derek. Do you have any timeline, Derek, for the crosswalk being built on 101, linking the east and west sides?
Hi, Derek Tokos, Community Development. I don't have a specific schedule for that up at 60th.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't. And I'm not sure that it's going to be a conventional rapid flashing beacon like we have elsewhere, given the speeds on the highway there. The solution may need to be a little bit different to ensure that vehicles can see that people are crossing with a little bit more response time. So that still has to be worked through. I don't have a specific date.
Certainly. I believe it's been brought up by the council before, and I don't know if I can't speak for everyone, but I believe we had asked that you make that crosswalk a priority to happen for that neighborhood. And I don't know how you make it happen, but I think it
One step, Counselor, is it's identified as a priority project in the TSP that you'll be adopting.
Okay.
And that opens a door for funding at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
We have other crossings such as Eads and 20 that actually is budgeted, and we're using urban renewal funds for that. So that one's actually part of the current fiscal year budget. This one would follow in terms of timing.
Like year, 2-3 years, what?
Well, you know, we expect that the TSP is going to be adopted this spring. So you would be looking at the upcoming fiscal year as an opportunity to get that project framed out and budgeted. That would be reasonable.
Mm-hmm. So 2 years are we looking at? I mean, I know you can't say exactly, but I would like some ideas.
Yeah, I think from a budgeting standpoint, mm-hmm. we're going to be going through the budget to develop the budget for the fiscal year. We have to go through the various ODOT approvals for the crossing, and the TSP
right.
is going to help inform that process, which you'll be adopting in March. So I suspect that funding could be made available by the council or by Urban Renewal in for the fiscal year beginning July 1st. And so it's potential that that something could be completed in this next fiscal year for that project, if we can get through the permitting process with ODOT for the type of solution that's appropriate there. So this is a little different mm-hmm. scenario than what we have at other locations because of the highway speeds.
It needs repeated how dangerous the situation is there. I've been crossing that, going up and down 101 in that section for work lately, and the kids on bikes are crossing on whatever that street is there, 59th, I think, just between the new apartments and the old apartments. And the hill going northbound on 101 obscures the view of them crossing just to the south of where the bus shelter has been built. And when they cross, they can't see the crest of that hill of the northbound traffic. It's extremely dangerous. I've had to slam on my brakes a number of times, and I really feel for the residents there. They need a solution from us. I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but it is approaching a serious safety issue that the city's aware of, and therefore we need to advocate with ODOT as much as possible how important it is to get a safer pedestrian crossing across the highway there.
Yeah, we have initiated conversations with ODOT, and so they're aware that this is something that's going to be coming up sooner rather than later. And so the key is getting through the transportation planning process, having that part of the plan so that we can take the next steps to get that done. So
I have a question then. So when we are developing our council goals for next year, we don't need to vote on this and put stickers or whatever to amp this up, like, because we're in agreement that this should be a priority, right? I'm just clarifying.
Well,
on
actually,
a procedural piece.
Actually, from a goal setting standpoint, if this is a council goal, it should be part of that process. Which we know, mm-hmm. and we're advocating for it now because we know it's a priority from council members, and it's a priority for us as well, because I've driven through that same area, and it's not a comfortable situation for people crossing 101 at that location. And it's not a comfortable situation for people driving through that area as well, looking at people trying to cross the street. So anyway, it is something that's going to take a little time, but that's the sequence that I think is potentially doable, is how I described that earlier.
Councillor Goble.
So Spencer, so when you say a more, what I want to say, more stringent kind of control system for the pedestrians, are you talking about a lighted intersection?
Yeah, I'm not sure what's in the realm of possibilities for doing that. And Derek, you can elaborate a little more on.
Yeah, I think you're going to be looking at potential advanced warning signs with flashers, potentially with an elevated light, so you get it up above the human grade. You can see it up a little bit higher. So you do see different forms of these of enhanced crossings, the pedestrian activated ones. Some of them are more at grade flashers, 8 feet up. You have others that'll be pole mounted further up. Maybe this is a pole mounted location. Those are options that'll be sorted through and would have to be sorted through for design purposes.
So you're not talking about a lighted intersection?
No, I don't. I'm not a signalized intersection. No.
But because I think we've been talking about putting one on 72nd or out there further, right?
73rd, yeah.
73rd.
Yeah, 60th wouldn't meet the state's warrants. They wouldn't authorize a traffic signal there. But enhanced ped crossing, yes, we can get that.
Okay. I'd support something like that, yeah.
All right.
Cynthia, you're going to have to bring this up. You're going to have to bring this up at a goal session then, Cynthia.
I'm sure she will.
And I'll call you on you in just a second, Councillor. Derek, were you using enhanced pedestrian? What was the wording you used?
Enhanced pedestrian crossing.
Councillor Kaplan.
I'm just curious as to why it wouldn't meet, and I don't know what the state's requirements would be, but it would seem that with the residential development there, potential for children crossing, why doesn't it meet state's requirements for a lighted signal?
Not for a traffic signal, because the state's requirements are such that you have to have a higher level of side street volume, traffic volume, before they'll allow a signal for vehicles on the highway. Mm-hmm. Right or wrong, their general premise is they try to avoid too many signals because they want to promote traffic flow along the highway. Whereas as a city, mm-hmm. we would like to see more of them because they create gaps where we can get on and off the highway system. Yeah. And they are a safety feature for those crossing at a signal. So that's your tension there. But an enhanced ped crossing doesn't have that same kind of what they call warrant process. We can get that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Nancy.
Thanks. I just wanted to ask, going back to the idea of the park development itself on the east side, given that this is going to be a partnership with a private entity, that still implies to me that the city is going to have to dedicate some funds to the project. And I wonder whether you all would be willing to make that project a priority in your priority setting session this year for next year.
That certainly.
I'm excited about the crossing too. We should have the crossing as well, but I just want to focus on the park for a second.
Yeah, I think that's again a discussion that we'll be having during goal setting session, and there's some opportunities that we have with that project that are a little different than other projects we have because it's within. If it's part of a development project, there could be some offsets to help fund that work. So that's kind of in the preliminary stages of discussions at this point.
Thanks.
It's already on my
I would only
Nancy.
Add that, if we're partnering with a developer, I would only add that we are somewhat kind of tied to their schedule. They are looking to do their phase one work, which is an assisted living project, next summer. But developers' schedules change for reasons we don't have any control over. I just wanted to make sure it was, that was out there.
Understood. Great. Mm-hmm. That's good to know. Thanks, Derek.
All All right, we are out of time on this agenda item, so thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Mike. And we are moving on at this time to 2D, the climate sustainability report. We have about 15 minutes to cover that. Spencer.
Yeah, in your packet, there is a report and also information that was compiled back in 2020 regarding a summary of actions taken by the city in recent years. And again, a copy was in the packet for your review. On October, the council also heard, in 2020, heard a presentation from the Lincoln County Climate Action Plan by Martin Desmond. I've attached an executive summary from that plan for your review as well and reminder. The council has indicated a desire to develop a climate action plan for the city. The city has been taking actions to reduce our impact on climate in many ways, actually, over the past couple of years since that report was done, but we have not been able to move forward with a specific climate action plan, a long-term plan for the city. We did the most recent things that we've done is to reduce our impact on the environment, including budgeting for the purchase of hybrid vehicles where available to replace gas vehicles. We have committed and are pursuing the replacement or the placement of EV charging stations at 3 locations in the city, taken steps to reduce paper and adopt a new format for issuing and paying utility bills and other bills for the city as well to reduce, again, the paper involved with that. We have implemented new software to allow customers to monitor their water usage. We've dealt legislatively with single-use plastic bags a couple years ago. We're dealing with the single-use plastic food service container later tonight and other steps as well. We've also, from a regulatory standpoint, there's a number of actions that are directly climate-related, including the adoption of tsunami standards that were done earlier this year by the council, proceeding with the Quinta Bay Estuary Study in conjunction with the state. We are participating in the county wildfire building standards to deal with the impact that climate is having on wildfires on the coast and on the water issues, dealing with redundant water under the bay, as well as the project that we've been cooperating with the hospital on to deal with, again, water issues during the natural disasters that are certainly likely to become more common. From a climate action plan standpoint, I guess I'm looking for some direction from the council on how we want to proceed with that particular effort. And I had hoped that we'd be, you know, a little farther along on actually having a plan in place, but I am pleased that we've been able to actually take specific actions besides the development of a plan to kind of reduce our carbon footprint here in the community and prepare for climate change as well. So anyway, this is more of an open discussion with the council of where the council wants to go with this climate plan process.
Discussion, Councillor Parker.
So what we have in front of us here looks more like a memo for an agenda item. Is that a fair way to characterize what you created here, Spencer?
Yep.
Okay, so I got some good news and some bad news. I'll start with the bad news just because that's my thing. So the bad news is this is, we are in a preemption state. And so it's great to say that we regulated bags, but if the state standard is lower than the local community standard for environmental protections, then that adds a layer of complexity and difficulty to measurability. The good news is your memo addresses scale, and scale is important because, yes, individual actions matter, but industrial processes and wholesale electrical and power production and power use matters more. And so I appreciate that you've added the information about making the sewer and water plants more energy efficient, because that's the lion's share of where the energy goes that the city uses and consumes. So that's important. What I would also say in the good news category moving swiftly to that, is there are 100,000 adopted municipal, county, and state climate action plans for us to find a template for, so we're not reinventing the wheel here. So what I would recommend we do is create a smaller group that creates a draft action plan and then bring it back to the council for review. And I would like to get clarification on what year was a climate action plan a council goal. Was that 2019 or was that 2020?
I don't remember offhand, but I know it was a goal in one of those two years, but I'd have to look that up.
Well, either way, it's still a goal. So how does that plan sound to everyone else? Can we get a smaller group together, pick the template we like that's scalable to a small coastal city with our specific needs in mind, and then put it out once it's a draft, put it out for public comment, and bring in a coalition to help us with this, because we really need to bring in the higher end user and industrial scale businesses here in the city to get more buy-in and get their important and wanted inputs for this plan. That's what I'd say.
I have just a question in terms of procedure. I'm all for a small committee. In order for us to form such a thing, does it need to be approved by council and go through that process? And timeline-wise, I mean, I'd like to really, like, align this with the council goals.
Yeah, I think from a, if this is a formal council work group to develop a plan, typically we've done that by having a resolution prepared for the council, establishing the work group, and that's something that we could have prepared for the January meeting.
Attorney David Allen.
So in follow-up to that, so if the council does approve a formal work group with even less than a quorum of the council, let's say three council members, the fact it's being formed formally, as well as making recommendations to the entire council, that will be a public body subject to the public meetings law.
I'm clear on that part. I think that there would be a great interest from the community, and there are a number of community members who've come before us before, Martin Desmond, Bill Kucha, you know, who would be very interested in being a part of this, you know, and many others that we aren't naming, right? But it does seem like the next step would be more community engagement to formalize this and follow a model template.
So another option is...
I'm going to push back on that a little bit. What I would say is, we need to figure out what the scale of the plan is before we do the public engagement portion. So I think a smaller group of department heads, Spencer, and a few counselors below the threshold of a public meeting is more productive in the first steps, and we get a skeleton together and then fly the flag out there. But I don't want this to turn into the seven-year parking committee with no outcome.
Right.
I'm very concerned about that. We don't have 7 years. So how about we do the bare-bones stuff informally, and then get input for it by the council, and then, as Spencer said, then we can go to the resolution and then go to the formality. But is that a legal framework that will work, David?
So if you're actually, as a council, going to be directing council members and staff to come together and put together a recommendation up to the council, that will have to be a public meetings issue. Spencer, as the city manager, could actually appoint people that would then make a recommendation perhaps to him that he could perhaps then take into consideration. But even with two or three council members, if it's going to be even informally, if you're putting together a recommendation up to the council, it's really going to have to be subject to the public meetings law. The only exception is if a group was put together just to compile information, not to make a recommendation, just to gather information and then send that information up to the council to consider and make a recommendation on, that's where you can perhaps not necessarily have to have a public meetings notice requirement. But if you're talking about recommendations, you're going to, you know, there's really not much you can do to get around it at this point.
Okay, I want to keep this as informal as we can for the very initial step of going beyond the Spencer memo, for which this document will henceforth be known. So say a couple of people, some staff, some counselors, but below three, were to sit down and say, here are five plans, and that's it. and then that goes into agenda packet.
Yeah, I think
how would that work?
Yeah, I think from the standpoint of me asking for a group to advise me on something, that's something that we can do more informally. But this group has no legal power to go forward, and I think limiting the council involvement to a couple council members would potentially meet that threshold, but that's something we can discuss. And I don't know, David, if you've got any other comments.
I'll take
that.
A closer look at it, because there are actually some scenarios that I've read about in which the city manager or the administrator actually is putting together a group, but that's part of a recommendation the city administrator is putting up to the entire council, and there's some kind of, I guess, threshold that you have to kind of make sure you're not crossing. So what we'll do, let's do this. I think we kind of get a sense of where the council wants to go with this, with a small informal group. And I'll look into what the most current case law is and see what we can put together that's gonna be informal and comply with the public meetings law if in fact we don't wanna actually have to have these formal notices and public meetings requirements, and bring that back to the council for consideration perhaps at the next meeting as how they want to proceed on that. Spencer, does that sound like a good plan?
No, I think that's what we can do. So we'll bring a report back to you. And one thing I've got to correct too, we've kept on talking about a January 4th Tuesday meeting. It actually is Monday, January 3rd. So if you've got the 4th on your calendars, please shift that to Monday the 3rd, because the holiday that's observed for New Year's will be on Friday before the weekend, not the Monday following. So that's that January 4th date has floated around on a number of documents. That's not the correct date. It's actually January 3rd. But if the council is comfortable, I'll bring a report back to the council on the 3rd on how we're going to potentially proceed with this to get council affirmation of that process.
When is our goal setting session?
January 10th.
Okay. Is that enough time? Sorry,
I'm there just... is not enough time. I think this process is going to be running. You know, we have a lot to do, and we're overwhelmed at this point. We've got staff, issues as well, and so we're going to work our way through this as best we can. There's no way that the goals for this year can be specifically informed by something that would be developed and finally approved and vetted to the public. They're going to be two separate processes that have to go on parallel. There's just not enough time to do that way. So,
okay.
There can be elements that we talk about that get folded into the goals for this year, but this is going to take a little bit of time. So.
We don't have a lot more time on this topic, so any final comments on this topic before we go into the executive session?
Yeah, I got a couple things specifically that Spencer could make note of for his report. The implementation of additional options to pay bills online. Just remember, the more we move paper processes offline and onto servers, a lot of the server banks are located in areas of the country that are exclusively coal-powered, so you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul there. There's a couple others included in that would be the e-payroll thing. And then the PUD would do a comprehensive upgrade of street lighting. Did we ever get commitment on them as to when that would occur? I know we asked them.
Yeah, no, we don't have a commitment from PUD. They are evaluating the dark sky street lights, I don't know what the status of that is, but we have been periodically bumping them on this issue as well, and I'll see if I can add some information on where that's at for the report on January 3rd.
And two other quick things, just trying to figure out if you can incorporate whether HR has done anything with the employee charging opportunity at certain particular facilities that have that amenity. And then remember that the state of California just outlawed new sales of gas-powered landscaping tools. So as Public Works sunsets tools that are no longer useful beyond their service life, remember that regulation is coming at some point.
Okay.
Okay. At this time, we would entertain a motion to move and hold an executive session. In the city manager's report, there is template language for this.
I move we go into executive session pursuant to ORS 192.660, subsection 2, subsection D, related to labor negotiations.
I'll second it.
Okay, the second, Councilor Goble made the motion. Councilor Jacoby made the second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Yeah. All right.
And we're going to have a brief period of time when Peggy has to make the change here. Yep. Okay.
And we at that we will close the work session at this time.
Hit the gavel.
Don't you want to close the work session before we go into executive session?
Yes, we do.